Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello everybody and welcome to your latest edition of Red Men Weekly. These are some of the best clips from Red Men Plus this week. And we begin with a clip from our biased football show where myself, Paul and Chloe spoke about another points deduction for Everton.
Everton have been deducted 2 points for a second breach of Premier League financial rules, profits and sustainability rules, brackets PSR, permit clubs to lose £105 million over 3 years, and an independent commission found Everton breached that by £16.6 million for the three-year period to 22-23. They drop one place to 16th and are now 2 points above the relegation. So they had a 10-point deduction reduced to 6 on appeal in February for the three-year period to 21-22. Everton say the club will appeal the decision. The Merseyside club could yet face a further points deduction in relation to interest costs associated with the building of the club's new stadium, though that issue is unlikely to be resolved before the end of the season. In its written reasons, the independent commissions of the Premier League had asked for a 5-point deduction for the club. The commission decided that any breach of PSR justifies a 3-point deduction with an additional 2 points because Everton's breach of 16.6, 15.8% above the £105 million threshold, is deemed significant. However, the commission accepted Everton's arguments for mitigation in relation to the fact that the club has, one, already been deducted points this season, two, suffered a loss of revenue because of the suspension of sponsorship deal with Russian company USM, and three, made an early admission guilt. Now, we know that happened with Forrest, got a deduction for that, didn't he? Or a reduction on the deduction. Yeah. They concluded that Everton have already been punished this season for losses in years which overlap with the years at issue in these proceedings, merits a 2-point reduction in punishment with a further point for the loss of sponsorship revenue and early admission of guilt. It also, the club and league remain in dispute over costs related to the new stadium. Okay, we'll carry on with that, but that's the, they're the broad points on it, Dan. It's mad, and I think it's interesting because we saw with Forrest they were going through the mitigating circumstances as well, and like the Brennan Johnson transfer was seen as a big part of that. It's mad that this is the first we're hearing of the USM sponsorship, so I presume it must therefore only fall into that year's accounts. Otherwise we would have heard that previously.
Yeah,
and kind of fair enough. I mean, but also Everton was so dodgily set up with that USM stuff anyway.
Yeah, it feels a little bit like they've got away with it for sort of ill-gotten gains ever so slightly there, because I'm not sure that money ever should have been coming through, to be fair. That was kind of always like the worst kept secret in football, wasn't it? Obviously Moshiri was sort of the face of it all, yet it was never his money, and everyone kind of knew that without knowing it. It was like an untold sort of secret, if you like.
This is Alisher Usmanov, who was obviously connected to Arsenal in the, who was by all accounts bankrolling Everton, which is what they get around that with the USM sponsorship, which is him and his company. Effectively, that became their legitimate, in inverted commas, funnel for his money into the club, was taking sponsorship deals.
And then as soon as that dried up, they had a major problem, as we're seeing now, because Moshiri doesn't own the money to keep bankrolling it, as you say. And I think it either happened or it was supposed to be. He sponsored the training ground, USM Finch Farm, all that sort of stuff. And I think the training ground was going to follow suit as well. So obviously, what happened in Russia and Ukraine, obviously, Abramovich fell foul of a similar sort of thing, but he was openly the face of it, so it was a different circumstances, and Chelsea were given a period of time in which he had to vacate and so on and so on. Everton never had that because he wasn't the legitimate chairman.
Which is mad when you consider this, that
they might have been better off, by the
exactly.
way.
Exactly. Yeah, because you'd have had no choice, whereas because they couldn't legitimately come out and say this guy was absolutely bankrolling it.
Which I wonder, that's why we're only just hearing of this now. That's kind of my thinking on it, because you're right, that's been sort of the reason why they've had this big black hole in their funds for some time, but they've not been allowed to say it. So it does feel odd that it's come out all of a sudden. It's like, we've just got to say this, because it's such a big reason as to why we've got no money. The world and obviously the Premier League need to know about it. I've given up. What you've just said there from the statement makes perfect sense. I've almost given up of trying to make sense of it now, because it is so convoluted and it is so backwards in thinking, and it feels like, and I've got a little bit of sympathy with Everton fans, because obviously when they got the 10-point deduction, therefore after reduced, and then Forest get a 4.1, it's like, well, this doesn't make any sense. And so I've kind of at a loss ever so slightly trying to work out what it was going to be. All the talk this week with the Everton one was it was going to be a 4 and then a 6, and then I heard Baz the other day saying not going to get any points whatsoever. So it's a bit of a shambles, I would say. What it does do is it hots up that relegation battle whatsoever, and it means if Everton did have any aspirations or thoughts or hopes that they were out of it, they're very much now not, especially, I don't know if you want to touch on this in a moment, when you look at the fixtures remaining, like there are some 6-pointers coming down the line.
For
we're talking about Forest and Luton, they've got them to play.
Like, Sheffield United,
there's 6-pointers for all of them. I think Sheffield United and Burnley are probably gone now, but I think all three play each other at some point, so it's a fascinating little battle.
So Everton's upcoming games then,
Brentford was the other one.
They've got Chelsea away on Monday the 15th. They've got Nottingham Forest at home. They've got the Merseyside derby that follows that at home. They've got Brentford at home, Luton away, Sheffield United at home, and end the season away to Arsenal.
Massive games.
I mean, I'd not realised that. And is that even... I've Arsenal won a title since that one where Tony Adams scored against Everton last game of the season. Let's hope they have, because I don't like the symbolism and all that. So there you go, as mentioned. I mean, Forest at home and Luton away in there feels significant. Even Brentford in there as well, as you've mentioned, is a big one. The whole thing is a mess, and Everton by all accounts have complained again to talk about the inconsistencies which they feel in how this is being handed out. It says here the Toffees added that the club is extremely concerned at the inconsistency of the punishment, with 4 different commissions issuing 4 different points deductions this season. But the thing is, for me, this feels like it's starting to level out a little bit. Now, I know I'm obviously not as naturally up on the individual percentage differences in money and, you know, the absolute, you know, minutiae of the specific differences in the breaches for both clubs. But that they've had, you know, a point given back to them effectively for owning up to it, which that is, because if they hadn't, I'd be like, that's inconsistency, because Forest have gotten away with one of them. That feels like something. The thing that I think is the inconsistency is
you've already been docked points.
They can't be taking more points or have more points taken off because they've already been docked points. It's like, well, have they broken the rules or not?
Yeah,
you know, like if they should be given, and that's the problem with doing the previous season's ban in this season. That comes back to one of the reasons why they fucked it a bit. And I get Everton are the ones who are getting trodden on it, because they're going to be done. I think they almost probably need that Leicester one to come through to feel a little bit more like it's not everyone picking on Everton Football Club and trying to make it hard for them. But it does feel a bit weird. It does. I think that whole thing of like, oh, well, we won't, you've already been deducted some, so we won't deduct you more. That makes it feel a bit like it feels a bit bespoke, like someone's doing it on feelings rather than.
But if you're a Forest or Luton fan reading that particular line, you're thinking, well, why? And ultimately, why? And that's what makes a mess of the whole thing, really. And I guess for them as well, they don't know what they're up against. They've got a clearer idea now, but then if Everton are appealing that, that's another interesting little wrinkle. Likewise, a Forest, because the line really has been, if you appeal this, you run the risk of getting a further points deduction, because all of a sudden your compliance and your, we hold our hands up, we're guilty, and then you appeal it, that goes against you. So if they get another 2 points because they appealed it, you're making a rod for your own back, aren't you?
It doesn't state that there, does it? Like that If they do appeal it, with Forest, it was a very much.
I imagine it'd be
if
the same.
You do. Yeah,
it should be.
It's all a bit mad. I mean, truthfully, it's the Premier League because they've not had any rules at all in place, and they're just handing out numbers here, there, and
really
everywhere.
And
yet, it doesn't seem a lot of It seems a lot of inconsistency, especially you know we've Forest are actually challenging it, and theirs could rise from four to whatever. But it does seem mad that because they've already broken the rules once. Because they've done it a second time, they're actually going to get less of a ban. Like
that's not how it works.
It seems the more you should
repeat
do it,
offenders
the more
don't often get away with it.
It should be more. But I think it's a bit like what I would say. It reminds me of. I've often wondered this: if you get a speeding ticket, and then you get another one before that one's come through, and another one, you could have a ban before you've even realised that you've got the points on your licence beforehand. And I've often wondered about like those kind of circumstances. But and what I mean by that in this instance is it's already done. So Everton actually haven't had the ability to put it right because the rulings came in. Yeah. They got a points ban and nothing they could do could then stop them from getting the next points ban, which is why I get must feel doubly hard around this. It's a bit like, well, great. It's like having you've got a free hit on us. And maybe there is a little bit of that is mitigating for that to some extent, which I kind of get, but it does undermine your authority a bit. You know, to kind of say, oh well, never mind. We'll take a little bit. It feels like it's a pity point.
Yes,
which surely is not the point. The rules are supposedly the rules, because the more you wiggle around the rules, it's the clubs who are supposed to wiggle around them. Mm. You know, they're with appeals and going through cuts and all that. If you're, it's a bit like I have this with my kids sometimes. If you ever show that you can negotiate with them, like, no, you're doing this, and if you ever go, actually, do you want to try this? It's like, particularly with my daughter, she knows. Well, that's it. If I know there's a crack there, I know I can get exactly what I want. It feels like they've maybe loosened the position a little bit, and to be nice,
The other big thing about it is that other potential points deduction.
Yeah.
It says it might not be done by the end of this season, but does that mean it can be done
retrospectively? I imagine so.
So just to pick up on this, because this is the back end of this point. The 23-24 season technically remains live until the annual general meeting in June, when relegated clubs transfer their certificates, and 24th of May has been selected as a backstop date for the appeals process. Mm. So actually, to us, the season finishes on the 17th with the final game of the season, but technically the season carries on for another week to 2 weeks. Another week into up to the end of this appeals process, which is the following Friday. I think that, therefore, is the 24th. So it will feel stupid to us, because we'll be like, you're down, the league's done, we're all off on our jollies. But from a technical perspective, that the football will stop being played, but they could yet decide that there's more points deductions to come. Right. So Everton could have another Gareth Farrelly, Frank Lampard, whatever, on the pitch celebratory moment, only to discover a week later that actually they've got two more points taken off them and they're relegated, which feels totally against the point of the user experience of how you consume football.
The other thing I would say is that it was stated that they asked the Premier League to push back the repercussions from last year, because they were supposed to get it last year. So the fact that there's three in a row, Everton knew that was coming.
Well, I think they expected to be in a stronger position this year. I think they knew they were sailing closer to win last year. I imagine they looked at their squad and potentially the teams coming up and thought, we'll be fine next year, we'll deal with all this then. Clearly they're not fine. And I do wonder as well, as a bit of an aside to all this, if they do escape relegation this year, whether it be on the day of last game of the season or thereafter, they will have been very fortunate to have done so, not only in terms of the points deductions, but the quality or lack of football and quality they've had. I think if they're this bad next season again, which I can't imagine they won't be, given everything, there's nothing they can do about it, essentially, they've got no money to do anything about it. I do think they're in an even worse position because financially they're clearly a mess, but the teams that come up will be nowhere near as bad as the three that will come up next this season, because you're looking at high quality football teams. You've got Southampton, Leicester, maybe even Ipswich, Leeds United, obviously top of the league, I think, now. So they won't be able to be this shit again and get away with it. That's all I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is really interesting to see what kind of goes on with that one and another points deduction. I mean, that would be, feels like, it just feels like, it feels inevitable, really. That, you know, I don't see that they're going to have the quality to drag themselves out of it. They're not going to do, I don't think Everton are going to do anything in the remaining. I mean, they have got a game in hand over the teams.
That's against us.
Below, which is against us. Okay, but never mind. Hopefully that's a never mind kind of situation anyway.
Yeah, that is just not stopping, is it? It's a ever-evolving situation and we remain to see what happens next. But yeah, not good for the Blue Arthur Merseyside once again. And next up, I spoke to the brilliant Neil Jones about Liverpool's hunt for a new manager, with Ruben Amorim very much being the main name in the frame.
Manager hunt as ever, and listen, it seems to be developing by the minute, let alone the hour. From Portugal, loads of different journalists having their say on it. Vitor Romano was speaking about it this morning, but it does appear, Neil. I mean, I say this, it does appear on the face of it that all roads lead to Ruben Amorim. Fabrizio Romano was claiming that talks have taken place. We had Plettenberg suggesting this morning that there was a verbal agreement in principle already there. What's your take on all this? And I believe the club have kind of pushed back on that ever so slightly.
I wouldn't even say ever so slightly. Quite firmly dismissed that the idea that anything's been agreed with anyone, and even that the idea that a front runner or a preferred candidate has even been identified at this stage. Whether you believe that or not, that's up to you, but that's the Liverpool stance on it. Obviously, there's a lot of talk from Portugal this week about meetings that take place, and I'm sure meetings are taking place with managers, with players at this stage. Obviously, come the end of the season, the one thing about the Amorim stuff at the moment, there doesn't seem to be any suggestion of an alternative at this stage. There's a lot of Alonso, there's a lot of Amorim, but there doesn't seem to be an idea that, well, there's also, De Zerbi was quite strongly dismissed as a candidate. There's others that have been sort of fleetingly mentioned, but very, very, very few that you've thought, that might be a possibility. So it does, I think you've got it on the agenda, all roads lead to Amorim. I think that's fair, but Liverpool, as I say, are denying the idea that anything's close, anything's agreed, and even that he is the guy that they've identified, that as far as their briefing concerned, they're still conducting their due diligence and going through the process of identifying their next manager.
Okay, interesting. Just on that then, I mean, I've been sort of racking my brain over the past week or so, I guess, and even prior to that with the Alonso stuff, because timeline-wise, obviously we know Jurgen Klopp announced what he announced. He felt like he needed to do that, and I don't really begrudge him that, and that's fair enough. But it does feel like, and I guess by Leverkusen in a similar boat when we were looking at Xabi Alonso, and likewise Sporting, obviously Sporting are going for Premier League honours and stuff like that, and obviously the Cup as well. Is there a good time for anyone, whether it be Liverpool, because we're going for Sporting are doing what they're doing, is there a good time? How do you see this all planning out?
I know it's a really interesting one. I know Sporting took a big step towards the double, didn't they, last week? They got two big wins over, a win and a draw that took them through against Benfica in the Cup. So they've put themselves in a real good position now to certainly win the league and obviously into a final. Liverpool are still in a position where they can win the league. They've got another final potentially on the horizon as well. So I agree, it isn't ideal. I suppose I would have expected when Jürgen announced what he announced in January, I would have expected by the end of the season that you would have a firm idea of who Liverpool's next manager was going to be, and that might well be the case. There's still 6 weeks to go. But yeah, there is... If it was me, I'd be thinking, if Sporting Lisbon wrap the league up and have the cup final to look forward to, maybe that would be the time when you say, well, there you go, look, this is his last game. So let's, or even the last league game, let's give him the send off that he deserves. I don't think it has any impact on Liverpool.
Okay.
Personally, I don't think okay, Ruben Amorim's coming in, affects their title.
Because we know we're getting a new manager.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah. So it's not like, oh, wow, what, they're getting rid of Jürgen at the end of the season. Yeah. You know, I don't think that affects anything from a Liverpool. I think it's more of a Sporting Lisbon, or Sporting Club de Portugal. Sorry, we always have to get that right. And I go to great lengths now to try and get that right, having been told off many and many times. I think it's more of an effect that it might have on them and on him as well. You know, does he want that kind of spotlight at this stage? You know, when he's trying to get his what would be his crowning glory really at the club. You know, he's had success previously, but this would be his masterpiece, wouldn't it? You know, with supporters in the stadium, a league and cup double. And then obviously off into the sunset potentially. So I think it would be more from that side of it. But you know, obviously as fans and as journalists and as pundits and as observers, we want some clarity, don't we, about Liverpool. We want to know who the manager's going to be. And I know there's a question down below from the Discord about that. It's a really difficult one to answer. But the more clarity you get soon enough would be helpful. I'm not sure it will. I will get my wish that it's all confirmed by the end of the season.
No, that's it. And it's interesting. We'll come to the Discord question now, because it is on the topic. It's very on brand. To be honest with you, I asked the Discord this morning, and pretty much the instant five replies were all of a very similar ilk in terms of what if or when Amorim takes over. Is he likely to bring any players from Sporting? That was some signs. Yeah. The variants of that were who might he be targeting for his philosophy and all that sort of stuff. I guess, you know, the obvious answer, not the obvious one maybe, but the one that sort of stands out would be Inacio, given we were linked to him last summer.
If he's going to stick to the philosophy, he plays a back three, doesn't he, or he plays with three centre backs. You could argue Liverpool have got the tools to play with three centre backs if he wanted, especially with Joe Gomez. I think Quance is quite adept playing in wide areas as well. I think Canate is quite adept playing in wide areas. You probably don't have a natural left side, although Gomez played left back enough. So yeah, you'd be looking at maybe him and Diamande, the two centre backs that have done particularly well this season. Ignacio before that, I think Gonsalves has been linked a lot. Obviously I don't see him signing someone like Jokeres, who's been their top scorer, but he looks like he's been primed for a move. I think he's been linked with a lot of clubs. I mean, he was one that Everton were looking at, I think, when he was at Coventry. I wonder if they wish they'd have taken him now. But I think there's always this expectation, when a manager takes over, and maybe it comes a little bit from Brendan Rodgers, before that, maybe Roy Hodgson as well, that they're going to go straight back and get all the players. I remember when Klopp came in, and every week it was, he's going to get Royce. The sign Royce was going on for months, wasn't it? I think with FSG, the hashtag. And he didn't really, did he? You know, he went back to Germany and he got Matip and he got Klavan and Karius.
Keita at some point.
Down the line. Yeah. But yeah, in his early days, it was very much, you know, he bought the players that he felt he needed rather than the players he knew. So I don't think it's clear and obvious that he's going to do it. But the interesting thing is that if he was to come in and he's going to go for the same system that has been successful for him, and you know, he may well do that, then yeah, there will be a need, I think, to just change a couple of types of player, make a couple of signings that might be different to someone, would be different to say if Jürgen was staying for another season, because you might say, well, actually, we don't need as many centre backs. You know, if you're playing three, you probably need five, don't you, in your squad? Whereas maybe Jürgen's would be more midfielder heavy or even forward heavy. So I think it's intriguing. It'd be quite nice to see. I'd like Jürgen to stay, but it'd be nice to see a different Liverpool where you've got, actually, do you know what, let's see what this is going to look like. And you know, you might see certain other players become just suddenly unlocked and have different positions or have a greater role in the team. But I think the good thing about it, whoever comes in, but let's say it is Amorim, I think he's got a real squad of a good age and a good level of flexibility that actually he can have a good look at a couple of systems if he wants to.
No, absolutely. And I'm with you. And it's almost, you know, you can't really say it because Jurgen Klopp's at the helm. We all adore Jurgen Klopp. But that'd be lying if I said there wasn't a little bit of me that is excited to see what a different coach, if he managed to be. Because, and I've said this a few times on different shows now, but because Jurgen Klopp has given us so, so much in terms of that never say die spirit, that mentality, and of course, wonderful football. But if we bring in a manager who can just implement different ways of going about it, and maybe that possession hungry style, then when we have a lot of possession in a lot of games, but sometimes there are different ways of doing it, and if we can harness what Klopp's given us added to a little bit of what a different coach and new ideas could bring, it's an exciting proposition.
Yeah, and there's a lot of players in the squad that we still haven't seen the best of, have we? You know, just so many. I mean, Bradley, Kwanzaa, Konate, probably McAllister starting to get there, but Szoboszlai, Elliot, Jones, Gravenberch, Bacetic, Clark, Jaden Danz, Darwin, you know, there's a lot of players that you look at and go, well, maybe not all of them are going to get to the very, very peak of where they're at, but, you know, there might be five or six of those that might, they're behind another player at this moment in time, but with a new manager, they might just come to the fore and you go, wow, I didn't know, you know, wow, you're talking about Harvey Elliott scoring 15 goals a season, or you're talking about Darwin doesn't miss anymore, or, you know, there's a lot of potential within this Liverpool squad, and obviously added to some new signings as well. It makes it exciting. It makes it, you know, there'll be nerves as well around. We're probably going to have to get our heads around the fact that you maybe don't win as often as we become used to under Klopp, and we don't go for quadruples. Maybe we have to swallow that, but at the same time, it doesn't mean that they can't be a very strong team and a very, very exciting team to watch. You know, his sporting teams tend to score a lot of goals and don't concede many, and that's not a bad combination to have, and especially if they're taking on, you know, clubs that traditionally have been more successful than they have, then the ingredients are there at least for, you know, excitement going forward.
No, it bodes well, it does. And just finally on him, I wanted to ask you, actually, it's just popped into my head a moment ago. Been a lot made and a lot spoken about Fabio Carvalho and maybe what the future holds for him. And
I never even mentioned him.
He could be one that does benefit from this, it feels like. And I'm not saying he definitely needs a new regime, because who knows, had Klopp been staying, he might have come back, had a good pre-season, and life might have been fantastic under Jurgen Klopp. But he's enjoying a bit of renaissance. Obviously, we've seen a Hull, two goals again over the weekend. He definitely feels like one who could benefit from this fresh start.
Yeah, I mean, he made the decision at the start of this season that he wasn't going to get in, and I think he made a fair decision on that, because he looked and thought, well, where am I going to play? I think what we've seen at Hull, that idea that he was ever going to be a number eight in a 4-3-3 seems, that's gone. You know, he's not, doesn't look like that, he doesn't play like that, he hasn't played there. Liverpool don't really play with a number 10. He's probably not physically commanding enough to play as a number 9 in a Klopp side, and he's probably not quick and sort of dynamic enough to play wide in it. So yeah, he made a fair decision, I think, that I'm not going to get in. But if the system changes or the manager changes and the demands of the team change, then yeah, you know, then you start to look and say, okay, well, what where's the talent level? What about if he plays in there? Obviously, it's a big step from Hull, to, you know, from doing it at Hull, and he's done it before in a Championship, so we're not learning anything new that he can score goals in the Championship and impact games. We knew that before he signed. He'd done it at Fulham. But yeah, he'd certainly won it in the summer, in the pre-season. You'd say, well, okay, you know, if we're going to look, and there's a player here that you're looking at, he's a different type of player, but you're looking at Crescencio Somerville at Leeds, or you're looking at, you know, another good player from the Championship, Steffi Mavadidi or the likes. Well, let's have a look at this guy first and let's see what his levels are before we start, you know, going and signing players who've got similar pedigree or similar potential. We've already got one in the door, let's have a look at him at least in pre-season. But it would be a hell of a redemption story. I say redemption, he hasn't really done anything wrong, but a hell of a sort of a journey if Carvalho was to become a part of Liverpool's squad 2 years on from when he signed with such, you know, such high hopes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and just finally on the Emery thing, I mean, we've said it there, it's clearly not cut and dried, but as you said, there aren't really any other guys. It felt like whilst the Alonso stuff was going on, there was always that little added online, or that little tagline of, oh yeah, but Amorim's also in contention. That feels less, obviously they've kind of dismissed the De Zerbi thing, the Nagelsmann thing's gone quiet, he's obviously in the Germany role now. I can't see, as we sit here today, the alternative. No. It does feel all Amorim.
Yeah, it does. I mean, listen, of course, you know, it would, whoever it would be now, if it wasn't Amorim, would be, it would feel like a bit of a, whoa, you know, like a bit of a about turn. Yeah, you know, and that would, it wouldn't be beyond Liverpool, you know, the way that they've done it in the past with signings and things like that. But it does, yeah, I go back to that, what's on the agenda there, but all roads lead to him. I think it does look like he's very much front and centre. It's just a tough managerial market at the moment, isn't it? It's not, you know, and it shows really, doesn't it, how quickly the world moves on. You know, you think of maybe when Jürgen signed that contract in 2022, you might have had Graham Potter in the frame, Steven Gerrard in the frame, you know, it might have been Pochettino in the frame. All of those have either, or Ten Hag, another one, you know, all of those have either gone somewhere else or just not quite done what they were supposed to be doing or what they were expected to do. So every single candidate really at this moment in time looks like a gamble of some sort. I suppose, yeah, Amorim, 39, you know, a history of winning. I've competed in Europe, developed players, signed players, you know, language skills, communication skills. He maybe does tick most of the boxes or more of the boxes than others.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Yeah, boss, as ever from Neil. And as he says there, it does appear as though all roads lead to Amorim, and Liverpool are pushing back on that idea. Next up, I spoke to the brilliant Zach Lowy, a Portuguese football expert from over in the States, and we had a good old chat about the man linked with the Reds' job.
I wanted to ask you about how his sort of ideas and how his system would adapt to the current squad. Obviously, you mentioned defence and you mentioned the potential of the new centre-back, and that's kind of the way I see it as well. I think the left-sided one in particular, and it's interesting that Liverpool were linked with Gonçalo Inácio quite a lot last summer. Do you see some merit in that? Do you see there being a missing piece in this current Liverpool squad to really work with what Amorim will bring?
Yeah, for sure. I think that Amorim, he's definitely going to look at the Portuguese market. You know, I'd imagine not just players that he's coached, but also players that he's gone up against time and time again, and he knows their value. So I think that Gonçalo Inácio would be a fantastic signing. He's somebody who has really lived and breathed Amorim, because like when he came into the scene in the first few months of that 2020-21 season, like nobody really knew who he was. Nobody really considered him a massive talent. And yet by the end of the season, he was starting and just thriving in that back three on the way to the title win. He's somebody who's shown fantastic ability in multiple different roles. He's played on the left side of the back three, on the right side, in the middle. overall, he's just somebody who's such a good ball playing center back, so good at manipulating the press and maneuvering out of these tight areas. So I think that he'd be a really good fit alongside Van Dijk and Konate. As far as the other positions go, it's hard because Liverpool have a really good team. You know, it's hard to pinpoint too many positions, but I think that, you know, if I were to design a potential Liverpool team under Amorim, I'd probably go with Alisson in goal, then, you know, Konate, Van Dijk, and let's go with Ignacio. And then, you know, you have probably Trent if he does stay. I know there's a lot of uncertainty regarding that. I think that McAllister would be one of those players who would thrive under Amorim. I mean, he's having a fantastic year regardless, but he's just really an all-action midfield terrier. He's somebody who I think would really – I think the entire pivot, because one thing we've seen with Amorim's system is that, you know, a lot of these players don't really have fixed positions. With the current double pivot of Morita and Heumans, like, you'll sometimes see Morita drop back to almost like a left back role and allow the left wing back to push forward. Sometimes you'll see Heumann dropping in between the center backs. So it's clear that these players are really good at adapting to what the scenario demands, you know, and I think that they both operate on the same wavelength. So, like, whenever Morita goes this place, Heumann knows that he needs to go this place. So I think that there's potential to form a really promising synergy between McAllister and probably Endo, but it could very well be somebody else like Curtis Jones or Szoboszlai. Then I'd probably say left wing back. Not too sure if they maybe they go for someone else. I don't. I mean, Robertson has done a fantastic job at Liverpool. I don't know if they are going to try to move on and get someone younger like Ryan Aitnori, but I wouldn't be surprised if they do. And then the front three, I mean, Mohamed Salah is definitely going to be playing as long as he decides to stay at Anfield. Center forward, yeah, I think that Darwin is probably the closest fit in terms of what we've seen from Gyökeres and his ability to hold up the play, allow Sporting to go long. And that's one thing that we've seen. Sporting, like I said, are a very tactically versatile side that are really good at building up through the back and progressing to the flanks. But also they can thrive on going vertical when needed and exploit those high lines when the situation calls for it. They're a team that constantly keeps opponents guessing. And then I would probably say, yeah, the left side is actually the left-sided forward might be another place where I could potentially foresee a signing, you know, maybe even someone from Portugal like Wenderson Galeno or Roger Fernandes or Jota Silva. There are a lot of talented left wingers there. But I think that Luis Diaz, if they don't decide to sign, obviously Amorim knows Diaz well from his time in Portugal. And I think that he would do quite well there.
Interesting. Okay, that was really good. I enjoyed that. Just finally then, last question, after everything we've said, everything you've spoken about, do you think he will be a success if indeed he does become Liverpool manager?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, like I said, you've got to give him patience, but I will say this about Liverpool fans. In general, they are pretty patient in comparison to like Chelsea and United supporters. So I think that's definitely massive. I also think that Liverpool are a club that, you know, it's so important to have somebody who connects with the culture, somebody who's really going to be able to connect with these fans and, you know, have that similar mantra. That is so important. That's the reason why I think that Brendan Rodgers and many other managers ultimately weren't successful, because they just weren't really able to jibe with that working class pull yourself up by your own bootstraps mentality. But I think that there are a lot of similarities to be made between Sporting and Liverpool. You know, Sporting fans have definitely grown accustomed to seeing their best players go for astronomical amounts, and that's something that Liverpool fans, maybe to a lesser degree, but they've been accustomed to that, right, with quite a few players. But I think that Amorim, it's only a matter of time before he does leave Sporting. He's just too good of a manager and too good of a communicator for him not to make the step up. And I think that, yeah, like I said, I think that there are several reasons why. I'm not saying Amorim is a better manager than Alonso, but I think he may even be a better fit. I think as well, a lot of Liverpool fans would constantly be looking over their shoulders if they had Alonso and just saying, when is Real Madrid or some other team, or when is Bayern Munich going to come calling for him? Whereas with Amorim, there's definitely that possibility, but I think that he's probably more suited for a decade or 8 years or so at the helm. And yeah, a few other reasons. Like I said, I think that he's just such a good communicator, and that is something in today's footballing landscape. You need to be a great tactician. You need to be able to recognize what in-game changes to make, or you know, what system to set up with. But you also need to be able to connect with these players, to keep them motivated, both in training and games, to make sure that all these players feel valued, but that they also don't feel too comfortable in their starting spots. And I think Amorim has that in bundles. He's just so good at fostering that competitive, hardworking mindset. And like I said, like with the case of with Slimani, like he's also somebody who will identify a bad egg and get him off. So I think that Amorim would definitely welcome an opportunity to join Liverpool. He's certainly not going to be in a rush to leave the Al-Wahed because he's a legend there. He's beloved by his fans, by his by the board. But with that being said, you know, it's only a matter of time with the progress that he's shown that he does join a Liverpool or a Bayern or Barcelona or whatever. There are going to be a ton of teams who are going to be pushing for his appointment. And I think that there are a lot of reasons why he would welcome a move away. One of them is, above all, just being able to hold on to his best players. Like I've already mentioned, you know, since he took charge, Sporting have lost Paulinho, Mateus Nunes, Pedro Porro, Nuno Mendes, Manuel Ugarte. So many fantastic players going to teams who have ambitions of not just winning trophies, but building a long-term dynasty, whereas Sporting are in a constant state of rebuilding. And I think that he would definitely welcome the opportunity to know that, you know, my player is thriving and I'm going to have him next season as well. Because Sporting, like, the season is still like 10 matches, 9 matches away from being over. And yet you already get the sense that Gyökeres is going to be leaving, that potentially a lot of other players like Ignacio, Diomand, Hjelmand could be off. So I think that having that not hanging over his head, you know, having that peace of mind and being able to cherish that opportunity to build and push for the biggest pieces of silverware. Because I mean, let's be honest, Sporting are never going to make a push for the Champions League or the Europa League. They just don't have the finances for that. They don't have the perhaps desire. That they're just not in that same boat as other teams, right? Their goal is to develop these promising up-and-coming players, get a massive profit for them, and then rinse and repeat. Whereas some team like Liverpool, they're aiming to win the lot. They're aiming to win every trophy imaginable. And yeah, that's a reason why he's going to leave eventually. He just has that hunger, that ambition. And I certainly think that Liverpool have – I think that – you know, like I said, Amorim ticks all the boxes for Liverpool, but I also think that Liverpool ticks all the boxes for him, his ambition, his competitive mindset. And if he does end up joining Liverpool, I have no doubt that he would be a success. Maybe a long-term success, maybe probably not a short-term success. But yeah, like I said, I think that he's somebody who is going to not just like for example, like Antonio Conte, not just have short-term results, you know, but also put Liverpool, you know, build the foundations for a new successful era. I think that's clear. Liverpool are going to probably have to start rebuilding, you know, with so many fantastic players like Salah, Alisson, Van Dijk approaching the twilight of their careers. But Amonim is somebody who's going to do just that. He's completely transformed and rebuilt this Sporting side from the ashes. And I think he definitely has the potential to do that with Liverpool.
Yeah, thanks once again to Zach. He really knew his stuff when it came to the guy who could be taking over the helm from Jurgen at the end of the season. And finally, myself, George, and Mickey Haywood-Williams spoke about Liverpool's defeat to Atalanta and whether we can turn it round over in Italy.
Next leg, second leg, Italy, Bergamo. George, listen, Liverpool performed miracles in the past. We've overcome similar deficits in the past. Usually Anfield, of course, second time around. Not the case this time. Tie over for you?
No. I mean, it's Liverpool. And especially in Europe, we've shown time and time again that we can overcome a deficit like that. I think Klopp's farewell tour final season, however you want to describe it, I think that he will be on the players and the players will be aware that, you know, if we go there and we lose 1-0, that's a really poor way for the players to leave Klopp's legacy with Liverpool in Europe. And I think that, I mean, it's going to be hard. I'm not expecting us to go there and win 4-5-0, but I mean, last time we went there, we did win 5-0, and it's a very different situation. That's in the group stage of the Champions League, you know, just after we've won the Premier League. No fans in the stadium at that point, but you know, we've been there not too long ago and we have battered them at their place, and I think it can happen. I think it's going to be really difficult because it is in that, it kicks off that really tough run of four away games in 9 days, but it's at the start of that, so hopefully we'll be fresh. I mean, Palace isn't going to be straightforward at the weekend, but you'd hope that we get 3 points there. I mean, if we're serious about winning the league, then you need to get 3 points there. And yeah, I think that we just need to go into that. I saw Carragher's comments yesterday saying that at least now we can play sort of a second string team and just focus on the league. But I think that would be a bit of a mistake, because if you do that and then go on to not win the league anyway, it just looks really bad. And I think that we have the squad now, especially with players coming back, that you can go and play a really strong team and properly go for it in Bergamo and hopefully get a result. I mean, I think the players know that it's possible.
Well, yeah, if Klopp's taught us anything during his time at Liverpool, it's that we're not gonna throw in the towel necessarily. I've seen some people on social media and stuff like that, Vicky, doing so, Jamie Carragher being one of them. Because, yeah, I get that, but as George says, like, if you don't win the league, then you'll never know. You know what I mean? And it feels like Liverpool, as much as it felt like we were last night, aren't dying wondering, because why would you? Again, I come back to the point, you know what I mean? This is it now. You're not, next season is a concern. This, Jurgen Klopp's not going to be here for that long. Feel absolutely everything at it. And I think that ties into this second leg, doesn't it? Like, why not just go there and see what happens? If you go out, you bow out gracefully on your sword 5-4 and aggregate, you don't go out with a whimper, like you say, and just lose 1-0. What's the point?
I think that's exactly the mentality we're going to have going into that game. I think at the start of the season, and I think we all thought, I definitely did. I was like, Europa League? Yeah, we'll have that.
it felt like that.
We're going to get to the final and we're going to win it, because we're a Champions League team, really and truly, and we should be winning the Europa League. So I feel like he'll be able to galvanise. I feel like we do really well when we're the underdogs. We've seen it in the past. I feel like he'll be able to galvanise the team, and I think we're going to go there and I think we're going to smash him. I genuinely do think we're going to go there and smash him. And if we do that, it's a win-win either way, right? So if we go, then we smash them, happy days. If we don't, then we can focus on the league anyway. So I feel like it's a win-win situation. So
he has to go all out for it for me. Yeah. That's all I'd say. And kind of what will be from there on out. I think going for it and attempting to qualify is just a non-negotiable for me. Yeah. There is no question in my mind that you go there and you name another heavily rotated side, because you've got one eye on what's to come further down the line. That just can't happen, because I don't think Liverpool will stand for it, to be honest. I don't think Klopp would stand for that either, to be fair, given how annoyed he was by what happened and how it unveiled, unfolded last night. Rather, he'd be livid. And Also, it would be some story, wouldn't it? And it would be a very fitting way for Klopp's Liverpool to carry on to progress for the Europa League and to turn that around away from home.
It'll be so Klopp if we
it would be, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it would be wild, and I'm here for it. In terms of results, just quickly touch on the other results from the Europa League last night. Roma prevailed in the all-Italian clash against AC Milan, which is a little bit of a surprise, actually, certainly to San Siro. And Benfica beat Marseille 2-1, and that would be potentially the winners of whoever we play. Sorry, if we go past Atalanta. And Leverkusen beat West Ham 2-0. So they've got 1 foot in the semi-finals as well, which is interesting. Next up, Crystal Palace. George, you mentioned it. It's all about how we respond now, isn't it? Like, it's not going to be straightforward, as you said. Crystal Palace, and the posed threats. They gave Man City a game last week, albeit that was a seller's park, of course. But it is all about Sunday now. And I think if we don't win this, don't want to live in that world, really, but it does feel all of a sudden like it is a genuine sort of crisis time, and the season has then been derailed. So yeah, win or bust might be strong, George, but I don't think we're a million miles away from that.
Yeah, I think last night was probably our worst performance of the season. And to have that at this point in the season isn't what you want when you're going for two trophies still at this point. But, I mean, Liverpool do have the ability to come back from that. And I think we need to go into that Palace game without the mentality of, well, we need to absolutely smash them to come back from it. We need to get goal difference. Just go into it knowing that you need to win and win. If you win 1-0, that's fine. But 3 points is so much more important than going in and winning 5-4. You know, just get it done. Try and keep a clean sheet, because that is something that we're lacking at the moment. And just play the really good football that everyone knows that Liverpool can play. I mean, we wouldn't be in the position we're in, where we're in the quarterfinals of the European competition and we're joint top of the league with 7 games to go, if we weren't one of the best football teams in the country, in Europe. And that's what we are. And I think last night we didn't play like that at all. And Sunday's a really good opportunity to show that we don't need to go out there and absolutely take them to pieces, but just go out there, do the basics, do everything right that you did wrong last night, and win. And it keeps us in a really good position. And then if you can go and beat Atalanta and Bergamo, I mean, it then kickstarts what can be an incredible running for us.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and I think that clean sheet is, you know, that's a big thing, that, because it feels they're really hard to come by at the minute. It doesn't feel like we're going to keep on at any point. And in terms of confidence going into that Atalanta game, actually keeping the door shut would be really handy, because we might need to do that over in Italy as well. You're on the match preview later, Ricky, but just quickly, I'll get your thoughts on it. It does feel like this game has taken on an even greater significance now, really, because let's say, you know, we'd have drew even last night had we played well 2-2. It would have felt like that tie was sort of still in our own hands. We sort of masters of our own destiny, ever so slightly still in Europe. That's no longer the case. Therefore, the Premier League on Sunday feels all the more important.
Yeah, 100%. You know, we need to go there, like George says, and have a good response. I feel like Palace, and when we play Palace, I feel like we always do pretty well against them. I feel like we perform quite well. Yeah, I just feel like just go there, play your game, play the game that we know that you can play. Play the expansive, you know, counter-attacking, quick, dynamic football that we know Liverpool can play, and we'll beat them. We'll beat them.
Yeah, that was a grim old night, wasn't it, at Anfield? Not what we've come to expect from the Reds on European nights. Way, way off it to a man. Massive blow, massive shame. But who knows? Miracles do happen, and we've got to go over there and believe. That was your latest Redmen Weekly. I'll see and speak to you all again very soon. Take it easy.